Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Monica Brain. A federal judge ordered the Department of Interior to make a decision about outstanding mining leases in the Badger 2 Medicine area of Montana by next week. The area is considered sacred by the Blackfeet tribe, and even the Department of Agriculture recommended the leases be canceled. Is your community working to protect a sacred place from energy development? That's next, right after the news. Stay with us.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A Wisconsin tribe is asking a federal judge to give the green light to its plans to grow industrial hemp on its reservation. The tribe argues that 13 states have already used a bill to launch hemp crop production, and tribes should have the same right. Gilman Halstead reports.
The Menominee Tribe's lawsuit filed in federal court in Green Bay on Wednesday comes just a month after a Justice Department raid on the reservation destroyed 30,000 plants. Plants the tribe says were industrial hemp, but federal officials claim contained high levels of THC, making it high-grade marijuana. The tribe's attorney, Tim Purden, says the lawsuit is not an effort to challenge the legality of that raid.
This is not a lawsuit that looks backwards seeking compensation or anything like that. This is a lawsuit that is intended to clarify the law so that moving forward, the Menominee tribe will know what its rights are under the Farm Bill as far as industrial hemp is concerned. What we're concerned about is next year's crop.
Purden says the tribe has done its best to follow the letter of the law in launching its hemp project by working closely with the tribal college in a research project, one of the key requirements of the federal law. He says now it's up to the court to answer a key question.
Can the tribe move forward as a sovereign with an industrial hemp crop and industrial hemp research program on its reservation?
A ruling in the lawsuit could have an impact on other tribes that have legalized marijuana cultivation in California, South Dakota, and Washington State.
That was Gilman Halstead. Tribes in the Northwest and other interested parties hope Congress will approve an agreement to restore the Klamath River by removing dams, which they say block salmon. Reporter Chris Thomas has more.
A decade of negotiations between more than 40 parties for water rights, river health, and salmon survival expires at the end of December if it isn't approved by Congress. And Congress may be the biggest challenge yet for the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement, which covers water use in Northern California and Southern Oregon. Kathy Hill with the Klamath Tribes was at the White House Tribal Nations Conference, where she heard mixed views about the future of the agreement.
Sally Jewell was optimistic, but then another person, not with the administration, told me, nothing's going to get through this House this year. And, that's the mood, I think, maybe in Washington, D.C.
The Senate bill is stalled, and a companion House bill has yet to be introduced by Oregon Congressman Greg Walden, although he has said it's a priority. Brian Johnson with Trout Unlimited says if nothing else, the people representing these districts won't want to see a repeat of the water wars of past decades.
We know that all four of the senators in California and Oregon support the legislation, and so we're just hoping that they can deliver on that.
The agreement calls for removal of four older dams in the region, but if it expires, Pacific Corps could upgrade and relicense the dams instead, passing the costs on to ratepayers in a half dozen states. I'm Chris Thomas.
The first major snowstorm of the season has hit parts of the Midwest. Several tribal schools are among those to close. As South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports, weather officials hope people are prepared.
Several counties in southeast South Dakota and a large section of Nebraska and Iowa are under a winter storm warning today. The storm is affecting the Winnebago and Omaha reservations in northeast Nebraska and dumping heavy snow on the Crow Creek Reservation and Yankton Sioux tribal land. Todd Heitkamp with the National Weather Service says driving in much of the region will prove very difficult.
That's why we have the winter storm warning out, and where we're forecasting anywhere from 6 to 8 inches of snow, but it's going to be also a very sharp cutoff that we're looking at I-90 kind of being that northern border of the more significant snowfall. The further north you go, you're going to have lesser amounts. But if you head south, you're talking 6 to 8 inches of snow, and then you get into northwest Iowa, and you can encounter anywhere from 8 to 12 inches of snow.
Heitkamp says west of the warning area, there's a large winter weather advisory that has covered the Rosebud and Pine Ridge reservations in South Dakota today. I'm Gary Ellen Bolt.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by the National Indian Health Board. Open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace runs through January 31st. Many Indian health clinics will host enrollment events with help available in person. You may qualify for low-cost plans, zero copays, and zero deductibles. Plus, your clinic keeps more resources when they can bill your insurer. You can set an example for your family, friends, and community by ensuring your needs are covered when you visit healthcare.gov/tribal.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain, sitting in for Tara Gatewood. A decision is imminent that strikes at the heart of the cultural and spiritual rights of the Blackfeet tribe in northeastern Montana. The decision deals with an area of wilderness between the Blackfeet Reservation, Glacier National Park, and the Bob Marshall Wilderness Complex, called Badger Two Medicine. The traditional cultural district is abundant with elk, gray wolves, eagles, bears, and bighorn sheep. It's also sacred to the Blackfeet tribe. But another group has taken interest in the area, the oil and gas industry. In the 1980s, the Reagan administration held a lottery for leases on public lands, including the Badger Two Medicine area. Drilling there is currently on hold while the Department of Interior makes a decision to lift the moratorium. A federal judge ordered the department to issue a decision by this Monday. 19 tribes, Montana Senator John Tester, environmental groups, and even the band Pearl Jam have all opposed drilling in the Badger Two Medicine area. Environmentalists go up against the oil and gas industry all the time, but this case is more than just protecting an area of wilderness from environmental damage. The cultural and spiritual rights of the Blackfeet people are also at the core of this debate. Where do you stand on drilling in the Badger Two Medicine area? Is there a sacred place in your community that you think is threatened by oil and gas extraction? Or do you think there's a way to explore oil and gas without ruining sacred places? Our phone lines are open and everyone is welcome to the conversation today. Please give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Or if you prefer, you can send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. Joining us now from Browning, Montana is John Murray. He is the Tribal Historic Preservation Officer for the Blackfeet Tribe, and John is Blackfeet. Welcome, John.
Good morning, Monica.
It's great to hear you on the line today, John. So we shared a little bit about the history of the Badger Two Medicine area in our intro and the controversy around the mining leases. How long has the Blackfeet tribe been involved in getting these leases canceled?
Since the outset in the early 1980s, the tribe has been opposed to mineral development in the Badger Two Medicine.
And tell us a little bit of that history. Why does the tribe oppose drilling in the Badger Two Medicine?
Monica, you know, the question always, we're always asked that question from, you know, like we have to justify our spiritual background. I don't think other people are required to do that, but, you know, a lot of times people will ask us, you know, why that's sacred to us, and they want us to explain it in terms of English, which is a whole different way of looking at the world than the Blackfeet do. But you go back, this whole thing starts out in the early 80s when the Solonex out of Louisiana purchased 6,200 acres for mineral speculation and paid $1 an acre for that. And so what it really kind of boils down to is one person's American dream. They wanted to develop the American dream, you know, that basically manifest destiny. The God-given right to come out here and do, you know, to more driven by instead of, you know, God, driven by the dollar. And it's sort of imposing that upon us who we're defending it from a spiritual perspective. I think what you have is you have some invalid leases to begin with, and it's just not right to keep going with something that's invalid, and the argument's been taken off to the side by the National Historic Preservation Act, and that's kind of what we're going to be talking about here today.
John, the Badger 2 Medicine Area is not part of the Blackfeet Reservation, but it is part of traditional Blackfeet land. How did this area come out of Blackfeet, being part of the Blackfeet Reservation and sort of end up as BLM land?
Actually, the land is United States Forest Service surface, and the Bureau of Land Management is in charge of anything downhole, and that's why the BLM is involved. Going back, this land was a part of our Blackfeet Indian Reservation, and is arguably ceded in 1895. And if you look at some of the minutes, chief who called a meeting with the Treaty Council. We're calling them a treaty council at the time, even though they stopped making treaties a few years before that and started calling them agreements. They were still referred to at that time in 1895 as a treaty council. And looking at the minutes, the Whitecap, the chief, called them together, and several of the other headmen opposed. And they were saying that the people didn't recognize Whitecap anymore and that they wanted to contest what he was trying to do. And he was trying to sell off the whole western boundary line, which includes Glacier National Park. And so, out of respect for Whitecap, according to the minutes that I've seen, they said, okay, what we'll do is we'll agree from the railroad north, because the railroad was already put in the 1880s. And they agreed to go ahead and sell the land west and north of that, which later became Glacier National Park. And so, anyway, the chief Whitecap concluded the meeting. And then the interpreter, Potts, went and got drunk that afternoon, and then they were called back together that night. Some, I don't know what kind of dealings are going on. And so they called them back together, and Potts, who was drunk, told the headman, who were opposed to selling that part of the Badger 2 medicine, he had told them that these people here at Treaty Council, they want to lease this land from you for $1.5 million for 99 years. And so there was a lot of discussion. And eventually they agreed. And so Potts turns around and tells Treaty Council, because the Blackfeet are talking in Blackfeet language, and he turns around in English, tells Treaty Council, they've agreed they'll cede the land for $1.5 million. So that's why it has arguably been ceded. And we did in the agreement, retain some treaty rights, and we have exercised them aggressively.
Thanks for sharing that, John. It's definitely not an uncommon story of land leaving tribal control. We are talking about sacred places today. Specifically, we're talking about the Badger 2 Medicine Area in Montana and the fight over drilling oil and gas exploration in that area. Where do you stand on drilling in the Badger 2 Medicine? Give us a call. Our phone lines are open. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Do you believe that the leases for this case should be canceled? Would you encourage the Department of Interior to cancel those leases? Or do you think that the company that retains the leases has the right to drill in that area? Again, our phone number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's add another voice to the conversation. Joining us now from Bozeman, Montana, is Tim Presso. He is the managing attorney for the Northern Rockies Office of Earth Justice. Welcome to Native America Calling, Tim.
Thank you.
It's great to have you on the air. Share with us a little bit about the legal side of this fight. John shared with us a little bit of the history. What is at the basis of this conversation over mining leases and whether or not they were granted legally or illegally?
Yeah, this is the central issue that the Interior Department is dealing with right now and will make a decision on Monday. And the issue is that the government, when it wants to authorize oil and gas development on public lands that belong to all of us, as these lands do, has to issue a lease to a private developer. And before it issues a lease, the law is clear that it has to study the environmental impacts of development in the area, but also under the National Historic Preservation Act, it needs to make sure to consult with relevant parties about the impact of such a lease on historic and cultural properties. And in this case, of course, the entire Badger Two Medicine region is a critical cultural and spiritual landscape for the Blackfeet Nation. And unfortunately, in the early 1980s, under the Reagan administration, James Watt administration at the Interior Department, the emphasis was placed on getting leases out the door, and some other things got short shrift. And those included consultation with the Blackfeet Nation about the idea of leasing their sacred landscape for a dollar an acre, which never happened. And they also included an environmental impact statement to consider what the impact of oil and gas development would be on this landscape, and that, too, never happened. Fast forward to 2015, and the law has developed in the context of other leases that were issued in Montana in nearby locations, but not in the Badger Two Medicine, that those defects rendered the leases illegal. And in fact, just south of the Badger Two Medicine and another part of Montana's Rocky Mountain Front, leases were canceled by the federal district court because there was no pre-leasing analysis of the type that's required by federal law. Our position and what we've made clear to the Interior Department and the Blackfeet Nation has made clear to the Interior Department is that these leases are cut from the same cloth as those illegal leases. They were subject to the very same approach in the early 1980s, and they are equally illegal and for that reason cannot authorize development in this sacred place.
We are talking about sacred places today, specifically oil and gas development in sacred places. Do you have a sacred place in your community that you are concerned about? Give us a call and share. The number is 1-800-996-2848. Tim Presso is with us from Earth Justice, and John Murray is also with us from the Blackfeet Tribe. We spoke with William Perry Pendley. He's the president of the Mountain States Legal Foundation, which represents the company Solidex LLC, that is one of the leaseholders in the Badger Two Medicine area. We asked him if it was possible that the federal government made a mistake in granting the leases.
I don't know how the federal government is actually going to say with a straight face, notwithstanding four NEPA reviews, notwithstanding four American Historic Preservation Act reviews, notwithstanding 76 appeals, an IBLA ruling, four approvals, including approval by an assistant secretary at the Department of Interior, somebody made a mistake back then, and we have to cancel it. Nobody made a mistake. They can't retroactively look back and say, oh, yeah, that was a mistake. There were no mistakes.
And that was William Perry Pendley from the Mountain States Legal Foundation. Tim, your response to Mr. Pendley's assertion that the government did not make any mistakes.
Well, I guess I have two responses to that. The first is that what's not included in that discussion is the fact that the environmental reviews he's referring to, which occurred after the lease was issued, were each determined by the Interior Department itself to be insufficient, and for that reason, the BLM was sent back to the drawing board to start over on each one of those. So I don't know how doing deficient environmental reviews that the Interior Department itself wouldn't sustain amounts to considering the environmental impacts. It's kind of like saying if you got three Fs on three successive tests, that somehow adds up to an A, and I don't understand that logic. But the other thing is that that's missing from that discussion is that all the analysis that he's talking about occurred after the lease was issued. At that point, the horse was out of the barn. The development right had been conveyed to the leaseholder. And the whole point of these laws that we're talking about, the National Historic Preservation Act and the National Environmental Policy Act, these laws that require consultation with tribes and environmental impact review, is look before you leap, not after you leap. So it's too little too late to say, oh, we did all this stuff after the fact. Even if they'd been A-plus analyses, which they certainly weren't, they were sent back by the Interior Department itself as being deficient, they came too late after the development had been authorized. And the key point here is that you cannot go back in time and take the steps that needed to be done before the leases were issued. The only thing you can do at this point is wipe the slate clean and start over again. And that's why lease cancellation is required. That's how you wipe the slate clean.
But Tim, how did we get into this circumstance where someone leased land over 30 years ago and has been waiting for 30 years to be able to have the right to do it?
Yeah, I mean, on that score, I guess I would. On that score, I have a little bit more sympathy for the Solonex position, and I think, from what I understand from Blackfeet spokespeople as well, there's a sense that this has taken too long. I think we agree that it's taken too long, but what we fundamentally disagree on is what the proper outcome is. Our view is the government should have canceled these leases long ago, at the time that it was determined that all of their brother and sister leases around Montana were illegal. These leases should have been canceled right then, instead of having this roll on decade after decade to now have to face it in 2015. Solonex, on the other hand, thinks that the delay somehow means it should be able to go forward and drill immediately, and we don't think that's appropriate given the illegality of the lease.
Our topic today is sacred places. Do you have a sacred place in your community that you are concerned about? Is it in danger of being drilled for oil and gas? Give us a call and share. The number is 1-800-996-2848. Or maybe there is a sacred place in your community and you are able to find a way to have oil and gas exploration in the same place and do it in a way that doesn't damage the environment. We want to hear from you as well. Again, the number is 1-800-996-2848. John, I know that the Blackfeet tribe is not 100% across the board against oil and gas exploration. You do actually have oil and gas drilling on your reservation. Talk to us a little bit about the negotiations that you had with the company to try and get them to not drill in the Badger Two Medicine area.
Okay, Mike, you know, what we have is the National Historic Preservation Act was played out all practically to the end of the law here. And part of that was the law is to determine if there's going to be adverse effects. And consequently, there's pages and pages of adverse effects that could take place in the event of development. And so we have met with several times. According to the law, we met with Solonex, we came to an impasse. We just think that there's no way any development can happen in that area. And so we met again, and that triggered the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation. The president's council, who came in and a year later and called everybody back together and tried to resolve the issue. So during this whole process, the tribe has decided that they were going to try to offer an alternative. The Blackfeet tribe has been drilling. Have had oil on eastern Bundy land since the late 1920s. And we had a lot of stripper wells. And up on the northeast boundary, which is 50 miles east, there's a very good prospect there. It's right on the Canadian border. The Canadian people are developing that a formation similar to the Bakken formation I'm hearing. And so the tribe says, we'll offer up 17 tracts of land. Soil and X, if you just cancel the leases in the Badger. And the offer was denied. So he didn't, take the offer. So after a period of time, and then the hand was withdrawn, and it's no longer there, no longer offering those 17 tracts of land. So, yeah, we look out my window right here. I got a vehicle out there. I didn't come to work on a horse and travelers. And we understand that there has to be hydrocarbon development, but we also understand that it cannot happen in a Badger 2 medicine.
John, we're about to go to the break, but, we're on radio here. Can you describe to our listeners what the Badger 2 medicine area looks like?
Well, today it's all white. I can see it from here. We've got 6 inches of snow out there right now. The Badger 2 medicine area is, it's made up of mountains, drainages. It has all features. It has it goes down into the foothills. It's relatively unmolested land, and that's the site of several creation stories of the Blackfeet. It's a living landscape. We exercise our rights in that area, and it's not something that could be considered wild, like wilderness. I think it's not something that could be called wild and scenic, because scenic it is, but wild it isn't. We use it all the time by several different families and clans. And right now, we had a fire up there, so you'll see some burnt trees.
John, thanks so much for sharing that. We are talking about the Badger 2 medicine area of Montana today. There is a controversy over leases granted to drill in the Badger 2 medicine area, which would be probably drilling for natural gas. One leaseholder in Louisiana, actually, has been waiting 30 years to be granted the right to begin drilling. And the Blackfeet tribe consider that area sacred and have asked that drilling not happen in that area. Where do you stand on this issue today? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. We also want to hear from you if you've got a similar case going on in your community. Are you working to protect a particular area from oil and gas drilling? Give us a call. Again, the number is 1-800-996-2848. We're going to a short break. We'll be right back. A diagnosis of diabetes can be overwhelming. With the right information and lifestyle changes, diabetes can be managed. But sometimes the barrage of information is too much. What are the first steps? Do you know what it takes to make sure diabetes is under control? Join us on the next Native America Calling as we cover the basics of managing diabetes.
Victims of online loan scams pay hundreds of dollars for loans they never receive. Watch out for lenders who ask you to wire money before they will give you your loan. You could be dealing with a scammer, and once you wire the money, it's gone. This message is brought to you by the Consumer Protection Unit of the Alaska Office of the Attorney General. And by the Anchorage Marriott Downtown, one block from the Denina Convention Center and close to restaurants and shopping. Welcoming the upcoming Bureau of Indian Affairs Conference in December. For booking, 1-800-228-9290 and mention BIA.
Welcome back to Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain, sitting in for Tara Gatewood. Thanks so much for joining us today. Native America Calling is on many great stations across the U.S. To see which stations carry our show, please visit our website, nativeamericacalling.com. While you're there, you can sign up for our weekly newsletter or even subscribe to our show as a podcast. Today, we're talking about sacred places that are in danger because of mining. Do you know of a sacred site in your area that oil and gas companies are interested in? Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack told the Department of Interior to cancel the remaining leases in the Badger 2 Medicine area, and the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation also recommended a ban on drilling in that area. But the Montana Petroleum Association calls the delay on drilling for 30 years an intolerable assault. Where do you stand on drilling in the Badger 2 Medicine area? Give us a call. All opinions are welcome. The number is 1-800-996-2848. Or maybe you are looking into some other sacred places that you are concerned about. We want to hear from you on those as well. Have you been following the Oak Flat controversy in Arizona? Or fracking near Chaco Canyon? Or what about bear's ears in Utah? We'd like to hear from you. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And joining us, we have John Murray. He is the Tribal Historic Preservation Officer for the Blackfeet Tribe. And also Tim Presso is the Managing Attorney for the Northern Rockies Office of Earth Justice. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us today and chatting with us on this. John, before the break, we were talking a little bit about oil and gas exploration and some of the issues and concerns that the Blackfeet tribe has with developing in the Badger 2 Medicine area. I know on the tribe's website on Badger 2 Medicine, it says fracking the backbone of the world would desecrate both the landscape and cultural identity of present and future generations of Blackfeet people. What do you mean by the backbone of the world?
You know, that's sort of a term that come into play. Some of the older people have made that reference. It's the backbone of the world. But the Badger 2 Medicine is referred to in Blackfoot as something else. We say Awatsumoshka. And the nearest I could translate that word is that it goes on your head. And so the backbone of the world, I'm not going to respond to that because I don't know much about it. I'd like to state that just before the break that, you made mention that Solonex and their attorneys, or especially Solonex, has been waiting 30 years to develop his land. Inversely, or equally waiting is the Blackfeet. And we've been sitting on edge for 30 years. We've lost handfuls and handfuls of elders who wanted to see this thing resolved. Also, Solonex, has, 6,200 acres there, and there are also, he has only one lease, but there are 18 remaining leases in the area. And out of those 18, 15 are held by a company called Devon Energy, Oklahoma. Now, the executive vice president and the general counsel for Devon is a board member of the Mountain States Legal Foundation, which is representing Solonex. And so, it's just one big move to exploit the land. But if Sonex is allowed to drill, there's all kinds of things that are going to go in there. There's a bridge, miles and miles of roads, pipelines, sweetener plants, and that's on the that's only on one lease. And so we can't we don't want to let that slippery slope begin. We need to cancel everything. There are several pages upon pages of adverse effect that could happen right there at the Solonex well site. And so right now, we don't want to put those on the air because it has been redacted from the report. And so I hope I've answered your question.
Yeah, John, thank you. We appreciate you sharing with us. And I respect the fact and understand that, when people say, well, tell us how it's sacred, that we don't get to know all of that information sometimes. And sometimes there's some information that is just for the tribe. And here at Native America Calling, we definitely, definitely understand and respect that. We are talking about sacred places today, and we want to hear from you. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. Let's go to Carol in Montana, tuned in online. Hey there, Carol.
Yes, I am.
Hi, Carol. What would you like to share today?
I am Carol Dubay from the Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribes of Western Montana and the Flathead. We're just south of the Blackfeet area. I'm very opposed to this, and I know a lot of other people are opposed to the leasing. I marched in the 1980s at the University of Montana in Missoula for many with other people against this leasing. It's a sacred area to not only the Blackfeet tribes, but all of the native tribes of the whole area. For thousands of years, that area has been sacred to the native peoples, and I'm trying really hard in my prayers to support the Blackfeet peoples now. The sacred sites and the historic National Historic Preservation Act should be enacted on many, many other pieces of land. I believe that there is a group of native people in Montana that are saying no. We do not want any more of this kind of development of our natural resources, our sacred lands, and we're going to stand firm together because this is the right thing to do in this 21st century.
Carol, thanks for that. Let me ask you this. Are there anything on your reservations, the Flathead Reservation, a similar fight over maybe a particular area or an area close by?
Actually, there are things going on. The Rock Creek Mine, there's the Montanori Mine on the west side, the transboundary waters issues, everything that has to do with our buffalo, the bison range. And for thousands of years and a long time, many of the tribes met at what is present-day St. Ignatius, Montana, where the Jesuits built a mission. That whole area needs to be declared as a sacred place. And I believe that the whole Rocky Mountain front, from the sacred landscape that we would like to protect, runs through all of the Rocky Mountain front and the western Montana and into all these Indian areas. It's time for the people in the government to understand that we are not going to give up the fight for our sacred places that are still left for the future generations. I support, along with many other Native peoples, this desire to be understood, and we are willing to meet with them in our lands, in our places. But these places, especially the ones that they're working with now, are at the top of the Rocky Mountains, and it is a disastrous prophecy that will happen if they continue to drill in, frack into these areas. I'm very emotional and very about these things being even proposed.
Mm-hmm. Carol, thank you so much for sharing that with us. We really appreciate you giving us a call. And there is still time if you want to get in on the conversation. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. One of the issues in this discussion has to do with when a community mentions or says, you know, that an area is sacred, whether or not the other side believes them, whether or not the other side accepts that as a fact. And I interviewed William Perry Penley from the Mountain States Legal Foundation. He is the they're the organization that is representing one of the leasing companies, Solinex LLC. I asked him if he believed that the Badger 2 Medicine area is sacred to the Blackfeet people.
Oh, I'm not going to question their faith. I'm not going to question that. That's what they believe. I take them at their word. I'll tell you what some federal officials have told us, and it's on the record. They said if we wrote a check or if our client wrote a check for $5 million, we'd be able to drill. So that's coming out of the mouths of bureaucrats at one of the meetings we attended. But that's not my opinion. It's simply I take them at their word. They say it's sacred. I take them at their word.
To hear the full interview with William Perry Penley from the Mountain States Legal Foundation, you can visit our website, nativeamericacalling.com. John Murray, Mr. Penley implied that the tribe would give up their opposition to drilling in the Badger 2 Medicine area for $5 million. Is that true?
You know, that's not true. I was at the meeting, and I never heard that. That comment. Of course, you know, I'm a little bit of hard hearing, but and I'd like to know who said that. But there was a federal official in the back said that, David, that we would take $5 million, and that's horse. You know, that's not true.
Tim,
you know, I'd also like to point out the Blackfeet, the way Blackfeet think is more in tune with nature. It's in constant motion. And so in our language, we have a verb, you know, that you don't need a noun to move it. You just prefix, suffix, conjugate, you know. And so when you're thinking along those lines, it's different than English, where you've got a verb that is static and located and dead and basically lifeless, and it takes a noun to move it. And so when you're thinking a premise, a whole worldview similar to something like that, we don't see each other. We don't recognize each other's backgrounds or the way we think. It's not taken into consideration, especially when we've engines, Blackfeet especially, have been marginalized. I think what we've got here is when these chair ceremonies are transferred to us, and back in 1982 or 83, beaver sweat was transferred to me, and there are some seeds that were dated, one of the beaver bundles, that tobacco seeds that date 4,000 years. And so, and we also have sites just north of Badger 2 Medicine that was studied in the Glacier Park, the University of Alberta, and they have found sites in this less and a little more than 10,000 years that are specifically Blackfoot. And so when the ceremony was transferred to me, it was emphasized that this is the way it was brought to us, and this is the way we did it today. Now we have a culture that is basically driven by manifest destiny, to God's right to come out here and destroy, you know, the land. When their foundational study is the Bible, and I've studied religious studies in an undergraduate school, and know that the Bible itself has been retranslated 1,100 times. What audacity, you know, is there to question our belief system?
Absolutely. John, thanks so much for sharing that with us. And let's go to the phone lines. We've got Reagan in Cedar Creek, Arizona, tuned in on KNNB. Reagan, how do you connect to this conversation?
Well, I'm listening, and I heard part of your information, not all of it, but my concern is in reference to cremation, where some individuals have cremated their loved ones and they've taken their remains up to the sacred areas and has scattered them on the reservation. And as a traditionalist, I am totally against scattering ashes, human ashes, up on an area where, you know, we take our family to pray, we take children, we take animals, and we have blessing that's done in that area, and people scatter their ashes there, and which is totally wrong, I think. And but then we don't have any laws that take, you know, govern that. We have what they call the White Mountain here in Arizona, where White Mountain Apache Tribe, and that mountain is elevation is about 12,000 feet, and it's very pretty up there. And I've been told by one white person that they buried their husband up there. I mean, they didn't bury him, but they scattered their ashes up there, and which I felt was wrong. Just because that person liked it up there and they've done that, and these are things that is totally wrong, where they lack the understanding that areas are sacred to families and Indian people. And there's other places on the reservation that are like that, but then you have the new generation of Native Americans. They think that they can do that, but they don't. They lack the understanding that an area is sacred where it had never been done in the past, but they have done that, and they've gone on record. Some have done it secretly without telling nobody. But this is one thing where it's totally wrong, and I don't know, maybe it's going on everywhere else, but I think that, you know, people need to take a better look at what is sacred, how is it sacred, and keep it sacred like that without any interference from destructing that or desecrating that area being a sacred site.
Reagan, thank you so much for sharing that with us. It is a question, is it a question of education, both Native and non-Native, about sacred places? Tim Presso is with us, and he is the attorney for the Northern Rockies Office of Earth Justice. Tim, the legal system, talk to us about the complexities of explaining sacred places within the confines of a legal system.
Well, I mean, I think the discussion we just heard and a lot of what's been revealed in John's comments and the taped statements from William Perry Pinley, you know, this is, I think, underscore that this is really a clash of cultures. On the one hand, you have a culture, and I am part of that culture, but I have my mind open and my ears open to listen to other things as well. But you have a culture that leased this land for $1 an acre in the midst of the most sacred landscape for, as we heard, the Blackfeet Nation and other Native people. And in a world where, you know, I work in the court system, and until the early 1970s, the court system only responded to concerns about property, ownership of property, and claims for money. The Western European culture that took hold in the United States has largely been driven by concerns about property and money. And obviously, of course, we all, you know, in this world need money, but there are other things that are also important and sometimes maybe even more important. And the legal system has been slow to move, but it has moved. And today, things like the sacred landscape and the Badger Two Medicine do count in the legal system. The National Historic Preservation Act says before the federal government can do something that might impact that landscape, it has to consult not only just the government officials, it has to consult the tribal officials. It has to hear the voice of the Native people who have an interest in that landscape, and it has to respond to them. And I think it's been very heartening and encouraging. We've seen the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation, which is not a Native American institution. It's an institution of the Interior Department of the United States and has limited Native American representation. has come down solidly saying, do not develop this landscape. This matters to the Blackfeet people. It's a sacred place, and you cannot develop it without fundamentally disrupting that, and recommended canceling the leases. So while there's still a lot of insensitivities, there's a lot of education that needs to occur, there's a lot of work to be done, and you know, it's like turning the battleship to get the American governmental and legal systems to recognize some of these values that can't be just quantified in dollars and cents. It is happening. And this Badger 2 medicine issue, I think, stands to become a real point of progress in terms of having Native American sacred landscapes and interests be recognized by the United States government and the people of the United States is something that does matter. And I'm hopeful we'll see that.
Have you heard some discussions, though, on this controversy, maybe challenging whether or not they believe that the area is considered sacred by the Blackfeet? What kind of discussions have been going on, as much as you can share with us, you know, behind the scenes about this negotiation of this area?
Well, John has been involved in a lot of that, so I'll defer to him in a moment, but I'll just say that, you know, clearly there's some lack of understanding on one of the comments that was made by the developer was, if you'll just show us the rock that's supposed to be religious, we'll avoid it. And I think that just betrays a lack of understanding of the whole nature of the interest that's being asserted here by the Blackfeet Nation. But that view, I hope, will not carry the day. And despite the fact that that kind of view still exists, there are other views that seem to have taken hold, and that makes me hopeful.
John, what about you? How has the talk to us about the process of negotiating with this company and some of the things that you've heard along the way in this process, particularly in regards to whether or not, you know, what in response to sharing with them, this place is sacred to us?
Well, you know, I think all tribes, you know, have a knowledge base of sacred areas. And so basically what came about here was that we've always had the knowledge, just like other tribes of places. But what we didn't have was the way to articulate that, to put it into a study in such a way that it could be articulated and then extracted from that the adverse effects and you know, this type of person. So we needed a person to do this for us. And so what we did is we got Dr. Maria Zedinho at the University of Arizona, and she's from, first of all, she's a woman. She doesn't have that male American archaeologist perspective because she is also from Ecuador. And so her methodology was take elders right on site. And so we had elders who just, well, I don't know, you know, I sort of forgot everything, you know. And they get up there and these people would come alive, you know. And so we were able to put this into an ethnography, which went over to the Forest Service, and the Forest Service read through that, even though it was somewhat redacted at that point, were quite a bit, edited, and they were able to extract all these adverse effects, and that would happen to the culture, to the history, to the land, circa the sacred reciprocal relationship we have with the land, and so, but we also. But then also, in order to get that person to do that, advice to other tribes, you have the knowledge, you know. And if we would have just went out and started, you know, trying to burn down a building or walk down the street with a placard, well, we wouldn't have got anywhere. What we had to do was approach this from an academic point of view, but we needed money to do that. And so we were able to secure that, and I want to thank the Indian Land Tenure Foundation for that. And so, and that was how we were able to do that, and basically take anthropological, archaeological, anthropological, ethnography type of concept, you know, words, and then we would play around with the language and then try to translate that into English. And so That's the key, I think. And if my advice to tribes out there that are having problems with sacred lands, that was how we did it. It worked for us. I heard a lady just said earlier that she marched in way back in the 80s, And so that we thought, that's not going to work for us. We need to do this.
John, thanks for sharing that with us. We really appreciate it. And we are right at the end of the hour. Tim, I wanted to give you a moment. Any advice that you have from the legal perspective for tribes who are fighting similar fights?
Well, I think it's really important to understand what your rights are. The government, I don't think it's possible to just count on the government agencies to make sure that the tribe's rights under various agreements with the United States or treaties or under the National Historic Preservation Act are going to be honored. I think it's really important for Native people to understand what their rights are and be active in advocating for their rights to make sure that the authorities that are given to them to protect their sacred landscapes and their historical and cultural interests are respected by the government agencies, because the government agencies are getting a lot of pressure. Even well-intentioned government officials are getting a lot of pressure from the other side. The oil and gas industry is extremely powerful, and it's not an easy task for a government official to give them second consideration and put tribal interests first. And so it's important, I think, for Native people to speak up for their own rights and make sure that their voice is heard equally with these other powerful constituencies.
Thanks, Tim. We've reached the end of the hour. We will be following this issue as well as the announcement on Monday. Thanks so much to our guests, John Murray and Tim Presso. Also, thanks to William Perry Pendley for speaking with us before today's show. We've posted his full interview on our website. We are back Monday with a show about managing diabetes. Art Hughes is our executive producer. Tara Gatewood is our host and producer. Our associate producer is Andy Murphy. Stephen Emmons is our engineer. Antonia Gonzalez is the producer and anchor of National Native News. I'm senior producer Monica Brain. Have a good weekend.
Support by the National Indian Health Board. Open enrollment for the Health Insurance Marketplace runs through January 31st. Many Indian health clinics will host enrollment events with help available in person. You may qualify for low-cost plans, zero copays, and zero deductibles. Plus, your clinic keeps more resources when they can bill your insurer. You can set an example for your family, friends, and community by ensuring your needs are covered when you visit healthcare.gov/tribal.
Our children and grandchildren look to us for guidance, wisdom, and comfort. Let's make sure staying healthy is a message we share with them. Medicaid, the CIP, and the Health Insurance Marketplace offer free or low-cost health coverage for our families. Protect your family by enrolling for health coverage today. Birchi.
A message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.